unfiltered opinion.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
You secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
I'm Nicolette Mashile.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
In market matters this week, we take a look at the developments out of the United States. The inflation print came through this week. Positive print of 4 interest rate cuts. We also take a look at the South African picture. SA Inc. is back in favor with investors. And we look at Starbucks. Very interesting corporate changes there affecting the business, affecting valuations. Where do we start? What do we start with?
Start with Jerome Powell. 18th September? I think it's 18th September. He's going to tell us whether it's 0.5% or 0.25%.
It is the 18th because ours is the 19th.
Ours is the 19th. He's going to tell us 0.5 or 0.25 because inflation at 2.9 now means that inflation is done. Like, stop stressing inflation. Don't worry about that. All you got to worry about now is jobs.
Okay.
And we're seeing some cracks in jobs. So, and that was his whole thing, right? Let's go all the way back to that first rate increase, whatever it was. And he said then, you know what, this is perhaps going to cause some real pain in the job market, but that's, and now we're going to start to see some pain coming in and he's going to start some cutting.
One of the, especially with the jobs thing, one of the things that I remember clearly is he's one of the first central bank governors to sit there and say the average wage rate interests me more than the NFP number. And that's very telling of what you're saying, Si, is he said, I want to see how the pocket is affected, how the wage rate moves. And that's going to be a bigger tell for me around the strength of that labor market. And he's been very, very careful about that. If we get this, if we somehow pull off this soft landing, and I know Pietri's adamant we've got.
I feel like I'm that guy on the side of the road wearing the cardboard things, ringing a bell.
The end is nigh.
Pietri's adamant we're going to hit a recession, and he's got data that supports that, of course, that says every time we do see these rate cuts happen after these kind of hikes, we do go into some form of recessionary environment. But we've been debating whether or not it's going to be a soft landing or a hard landing.
I mean, we've been having that debate every decade. Every time the market pulls back, it's always, oh, we'll avoid it. Oh, it'll be a soft landing. And there's casualties. Well, not casualties, but, you know, there's collateral damage every single time that there's a significant economic contraction, aka recession. So I don't see how it'll be any different this time. I mean, this time is different, right?
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to think. Is it different this time? And what would make it different? So what would make it different? Things like higher levels of savings. We don't have that in U.S.
consumers.
We've
got the highest levels of debt we've ever had.
Yeah. Ever. Well, the U.S. debt is neither here nor there. $35 billion, they just print dollars.
The end of the petrodollar, perhaps? Potential end of the petrodollar? Let me put it that way. Frame it that way rather than saying it has absolutely ended. But we know that the agreements with the Middle East to trade oil, essentially in dollar only, has ended.
Well, so I mean, Russia's not selling their oil in dollars.
Well, yet.
No, they're not. I mean, they're selling it in renminbi
but rupees. Saudi Arabia still is, obviously.
Saudi Arabia.
But when that ends, right?
Yeah, but more countries are doing that. You're very right. More countries are reviewing what...
Well, and we can take it a step further and look at what we're seeing as central banks buying gold. So I saw a chart which shows that a number of sort of... And it's more the BRIC-aligned nations, so Russia, India, China, rather than your Japan's, America's, and Western Europe. Since 2018, they've been buying... Their treasury holdings are decreasing. And that accelerated after the invasion of Ukraine in 2022 for simple reason, right? Because suddenly you realize that, you know, hang on, you've got these reserves in dollars, but, you know, they could get frozen. But more than that, you've also got all these treasury bills. And will the U.S. do selective sanction default? In other words, they say to Russia, yeah, we owe you money for those treasury bills. Orcs, you shouldn't have invaded. So we're seeing a shift there as well.
So they're letting go of those treasury bonds and rather backing gold, essentially.
Yeah. So there's certainly less interest in the dollar. But let's not kid ourselves. The dollar still remains... I forget the number, and I actually saw it this week.
I mean,
like something like 70% of global trade is in the dollar. The euro's next at like about 15. The Chinese renminbi's down at like 2%. I mean, this is a dollar economy because everything else. So sure, petrodollar goes here and this and that, but everything else is traded in dollars.
One thing I've learned about China is they don't do things without an aim and without a plan. And as Correct. You're saying this around the gold reserves that are being stockpiled, I kind of went the devil's advocate route of it and thought, if the BRICS block stockpiles enough gold for it to have more in gold reserves or a meaningful amount in gold reserves, you can start to have your currency backed in gold the way Muhammad Gaddafi wanted it in the first place.
Oh, now
one.
You're talking about
this is how you get assassinated. I mean,
but also
a revolution takes place in your country.
But also, in addition to that, when it's literally a hedge against the United States dollar. If the world is still dollar denominated and going to remain dollar denominated, the gold price is valued in or benchmarked in US dollars, right? So at the point where you're holding enough physical gold reserves, any move by the US in an attempt to destroy the treasury
So the US can use their dollar as a weapon. And it can weaponize the currency, and that's to your point. And
but this neutralizes right?
Yes,
so having gold neutralizes the impact that look at it from the perspective of now, 2024, versus 30 years ago, 1994, the amount of influence or the amount of weaponizing you could do with a dollar versus what you can do now. Now, I think there's a bit more mitigating factors where the dollar might not have as much of an impact. I mean, previously, the US would wake up, go to the Middle East and say, you know what? You guys are in trouble. We don't like what you're doing. Sanctions, or we don't like what you're Iran. Yeah. You can't do whatever. You can't do this, this, and this. I think we're definitely far away from that kind of world now. And you're starting to see that if the US would try to impose sanctions, they themselves know that they don't wield the same amount of power as they used to in the past.
Look at what they did to Russia, for example. We're going to sanction you. Naughty boys, go sit in the corner.
And then China was like, we'll
take
your oil.
Like doing fine.
Well, except that they did take a couple of hundred billion of Russia's dollars. But
they survive. They carry on. Life in Russia is
well,
not...
because they're selling oil to other India and China. But the key thing is none of this is happening in the next year to give the US a recession. So it comes back to what's different this time. So he has a fun stat. Retail sales data came out yesterday in the US. Month on month. So June was minus 0.02. July was expected to be 0.3 and it came in 1%. So way stronger. Year on year was expected, well, had previously been 2 and came in at 2.7. The US consumer is not breaking because what we've seen is firstly an unemployment rate of under 4%. So if you didn't like your job and there was a better job over there paying an extra dollar an hour, you could move because there were jobs out there. Because we got all that money, helicopter money during the pandemic, which has been spent, but it also strengthened households' balance sheets to a degree. People haven't been moving homes because they can't afford the 7% interest rates in their new mortgages. So they haven't taken on extra debt because they've gone and got a new Mac mansion or something like that. Maybe the argument is that the US consumer this time is in a better space than you would normally expect at this point in the interest rate cycle.
But we are seeing an increase in credit card debt in the US.
No, I was just Googling that so I could see
To your point, Simon, around
credit card
the
debt since before I was a kidding. Yeah, but that's been, I mean, I've been hearing the credit card. You guys are not wrong, and it's a scary chart, but I've been hearing about that chart forever. And I mean, maybe one day it does blow up.
This is the same chart. This is the same as when we look at the US's overall debt as a whole. I mean, to be $34 trillion in debt as an economy, that's another story. But let's move to South Africa because the result of all of these speculation around interest rate cuts is that risk assets are now more in favor. But also, we've kind of done what no one in the world thought we could do.
We managed to keep the lights on.
What did we do?
keep the lights on. Oh,
I thought you meant rip Australia to rugby.
Hey, we're on a roll, hey? We're on a roll with a lot of things. But I was referring to the fact that the GNU hasn't collapsed yet.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Which for market strength seemingly has been a positive thing. I mean, we can debate things around policy and how all of that's going to be affected.
No, but it's an important point. We should pause there. It hasn't collapsed. And interestingly, the parties around it, ergo what happened with the EFF and what's happening with MK, the parties around it are collapsing.
Yeah, interesting. I saw the story that Shivambo's left EFF.
Yeah, he left yesterday.
And there's like a ton of other people that are supposedly going to go.
One or two, but they're all joining MK.
So
it's actually the coalition's almost getting stronger in a sense.
Yeah, so when you look at that, and that's what I was looking at this morning as well, is typically when you see political instability, the Rand has always been a politically exposed currency. Mm. We all know that. And whenever we've seen some form of political instability in South Africa, it has negatively impacted the Rand. This is probably one of the bigger moves in political times of late since the formation of the MK and everything. I mean, Floyd Shivambu was a founding member of the EFF.
Mm, I mean, him and Julius.
And Julius has called him a brother, you know? Mm. So for something like that to happen, it shows you, when you look at something like the Rand, that the Rand is not as influenced by those sorts of political moves as the moves around the political formation-ish, I don't know what to call it now, that is in power, right? Mm-hmm. So if these instabilities were happening within the GNU, as Sai calls them, then maybe we would have seen a different outcome. But I suppose the Rand strengthening here, financial stocks are on a roll. I'm looking at them today. They're up 1% today already. They were up 1% yesterday. It just, at the moment, yeah. SA Inc. is on fire.
Almost all of them. And quick point in the Czar, we're also seeing dollar weakness. The DEYX is down from 106 back in beginning of July, now trading at 102.9. So there's certainly some move there. But I mean, almost every chart I pull up of sort of, you know, SA stuff, it's just running. And like, I want to own some of it, but like, I don't have any money left because I've bought everything. Well, not everything. I've just spent all my money.
We're talking about it sort of, you know, pre this, where a lot of this stuff, and you know, I was saying it's like a really boring way of looking at the market, 200-day moving average, you know, the slowest possible way of doing analysis. But almost everything is trading above the 200-day in South Africa. And it's been a long time since that's been the case.
And if you go and look at that,
that leads to these like 3 to 5 year upward swings, right? And I think that's largely where we are as a market in the whole. So, and I guess this is a bit contradictory, I suppose is the right word, where I think like I'm bearish the US, you know, ringing my bell, but bullish BRICS in South Africa.
Yeah, and that's a hard one to play out because as soon as something happens in the US, everyone just panics and goes and buys US treasuries. Which, but I take the point. I mean, if we look at just from pure fundamentals, but also if we, you know, valuations rather. I mean, South Africa is way cheap and the US is not. But even if you look at it from fundamentals, yeah, not saying the US is collapsing and disappearing, but we're in a significantly more positive space than we have been in the last almost 20 years.
And I mean, we've got a huge amount, even if the US pulls back 50%, we're still 50% undervalued. Do you know what I mean? Like if you go look at that valuation gap on the S&P 500 versus the top 40, it's massive over the last 5 years. And, you know, roll that out for as long as load shedding's been around, and it gets bigger, and it's scary how big that gap is.
Again, as Simon said, it's amazing what can be done when you have electricity. Let's wrap things up with Starbucks. I know we were in the US, we came here, now we're back in the US.
So Starbucks was fascinating. I'm not going to do names because they're crazy. So you remember that Howard Schultz was founder, CEO, left, came back, left again just last year, and he got a new CEO, and that CEO now got kicked out, and the Chipotle CEO has stepped in place. And the net move, so Chipotle collapsed because they love him. Was it a her? Actually, I'm not sure. It's Brian Nichol, it's him. And Starbucks, it was a $20 billion shift from one to the other, essentially. Wow. As folks were like, so the thing is that Starbucks was the giant winner here because the outgoing CEO folks just haven't liked for a bunch of reasons, and Chipotle has been, I mean, I looked at Chipotle, I think it was just actually, was it last night, two, three weeks ago. I mean, they first came on my radar when they had, was it E. coli in their lettuce? Which is really,
it's one way to make someone's radar. Sure.
No, which is really, really bad. And they had, anyway, so they, and this is maybe a decade ago, they fixed that up. Their lettuce is no longer killing people. they roll out stores aggressively. They do things. I mean, the way they monitor, you know, just how long is it taking a client from when they walk in to when they walk out? And they're using this you know, real-time data and that sort of thing. It's just been phenomenal in the QSR. Forget what the food is. I've never eaten a Chipotle in my life. But it's that just taking QSR to the cuttingest edge. You know, of course, the world says, can he do it at Starbucks?
As awesome as that is, it feels so inhuman.
Deadly lettuce or?
No, not the vial. Lettuce, polony, same, right?
But please don't bring up listeriosis. Okay, we've been through a lot.
No, the whole sort of methodology of, you know, it's like a little food factory and you go in there.
Welcome
and
to capitalism.
It just seems, you know, the little mom and pop restaurant down the road, you're going to get better food, you know? It just feels very inhuman to me. I agree
with you 100%, except welcome to capitalism, right? What are you? Like, you're Chipotle.
You want to be the CEO of Starbucks or Chipotle. You're not into restaurants.
No.
You're a process engineer.
You're a process engineer.
And you're just a numbers guy.
And every three months, you got to publish a set of results, and they got to be
And they got to be up.
They got to be last time, and you've got to have increase in same-store sales and margins, and it's an absolute treadmill.
I'm trying to figure out why Pietri is so surprised by capitalism, like he hasn't been operating in this environment his entire life.
No, this
is not news.
All my friends who claim to be capitalists, and they're like, that's not fair. It's like, that's the capitalism.
That's how it works.
Nothing about it is
fair. I'm the socialist here. I'm the one who's been pointing out this horrible stuff, and you've been making profits.
And you've been making profits too. I mean, come on.
Okay, I've been making some profit too. Yes. And I swim in the sea in Durban, so me and Nicola are here.
Good friends.
Look, as long as it's not on your lettuce, you'll be fine.
I mean, Starbucks has I don't know too much about Starbucks, I'll be honest, but I do know that what they do with their loyalty program is like next level genius.
Yeah, no, that's a conversation we're going to do a deep dive on one of these days. The Starbucks business model and how they are a bank without being a bank. But for now, that's Market Matters for this week.